From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
Well, these are strange days indeed. We've seen federal agents in military fatigues in downtown Chicago. What some are calling a deportation blitz is underway, and fear is spreading among immigrant communities. But supporters of the effort say it's long overdue. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Chip Mitchell. He's a reporter for WBEZ in Chicago. Chip, thanks for being on the show with us.
My pleasure, Sean.
So, Chip, you were in downtown Chicago last weekend. I got to say, the images were pretty stunning to see of these people walking around, the military fatigues right there on, you know, what we would consider to be touristy areas in you know, right in front of the Trump Hotel in Chicago, for example. Give us your take on what that was like, what that scene was like.
Well, yeah, it was really something else, because this is, you know, the whole rationale for sending in these hundreds of, military clad federal agents is to fight crime. And this is not where the violent crime tends to take place in Chicago. It's not downtown in the Loop and River North, a very wealthy area. So these, you know, there were dozens of, they look like troops. They're wearing camouflage and helmets, and some of them carrying long guns, and patrolling around in two big groups, each with dozens of soldiers and agents, I guess. And then they eventually converged, and they did make some arrests. And my colleague, a photographer with the Chicago Sun-Times, and I, we saw some of the arrests, and they would, you know, these weren't like planned strikes where they're going after a target. These were people that were identified on site as possibly, you know, based on appearances, possibly undocumented immigrants, or as the leader of this patrol. It was a border. These were border patrol agents at the time. Greg Bovino is his name. He talked about intelligence and experience, but really what he was doing, and he admitted this to me, he just told me this, is they were summing up their appearance. And then he compared these people, you know, that one guy that they had chased after. I said, well, you know, how did you decide to go after this particular guy? And he just said it. He said, you know, well, did we look at their appearance, and does he look, for example, like you? He's talking about me. You know, I'm a middle-aged 60-year-old tall white guy, in European descent. And it was astounding, because he wasn't even trying to hide it. You know, that this is how they're operating. They're deciding who they're going to pursue for an immigration arrest, and many times based solely on appearance. So that's some of my impressions, Sean.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that you're not surprised to hear that, because that seems to be what we've actually seen elsewhere so far. Now we're seeing it in Chicago.
Yeah, and in a sense, the problem that Chicago has had for generations is that the white majority has discriminated against black and brown people. I mean, and that's Chicago's history. For a while, there was, they would joke about, if you're driving, you stop, DWB, driving while black. But Chicago has worked to try and overcome this. It struck me as just strange to hear a federal officer say, oh yeah, we'll stop people based on what they look like, particularly since the Trump administration has been very adamant about going after anything that smacks of diversity or equity, penalizing schools if they try and provide additional help to students of color. And so here Bovino is saying, oh yeah, we stopped him basically because he was brown. As a matter of fact, the U.S. Supreme Court said, oh, that's okay to do. This is the same Supreme Court who came out against affirmative action, and now they're saying, oh yeah, you can stop people based on what they look like. The court didn't give an opinion when they made this ruling about a month or so ago. But Justice Brett Kavanaugh had a concurrence saying that ethnicity can be a relevant factor, but he said that agents will use it only in combination with other non-racial factors. And then once they've established if you're a citizen, they'll let you go. So it's no big deal. And some people have started to call these kinds of stops, like the agents were doing in Chicago, calling them Kavanaugh stops after Kavanaugh's concurrence. And although Kavanaugh suggested that, well, if you're a U.S. citizen, you have nothing to worry about. In reality, U.S. citizens have been detained by ICE and Customs and Border Patrol agents, sometimes for hours, even overnight, just because they happen to be Latino. So I think the hypocrisy of it all really strikes me. And the fact that Bovino is saying, oh yeah, people want us to be here. 90% of the people think we're doing great. I'm thinking to myself, if you were Pinocchio, your nose would be about 3 feet long at this point.
Well, one of the things I've heard from a lot of supporters of this is, and really through the last several years, has been, why does the left make everything about race? Well, here we are seeing the right making this about race. But the shock and the factor, I guess, of them on some of these streets and in these military fatigues last weekend, Chip, very intimidating. I'm guessing that's the point, right?
Yeah, of course. Yes, exactly. This is part of a national show, and this is, it's not very complicated either. This is part when you watch the videos promoting their activity in Chicago. It's part they're playing to a national audience, and they're playing through media that is highly partisan, and they are whipping up fear and hate. Hatred. This is not something new in the history of the United States. You two know this, but fear and hatred of immigrants, and they're whipping it up to support Trump's and the Heritage Foundation. Their political and economic agenda, and Chicago. In the first Trump administration was a punching bag, but now it's in a much bigger and much more organized way.
Let me play devil's advocate here, Chip. I mean.
Yes.
You have people who also will say, some people will talk about, oh, they're criminals. Well, I guess when I think of criminals, I think of violent crime quite often. But there are people who said, hey, they're violating the law. They are here illegally. So, what's been the response to that?
I haven't seen the very latest numbers, but most, and I want to say it's in the area of 2/3 of the people being arrested. The Trump administration is saying that our targets are the worst of the worst, and we're removing them from the country. And I don't think that there's a lot of controversy about removing undocumented immigrants who have committed violent crimes or even felonies that some of which are not violent. I don't think that that's too controversial an idea. But the fact is that they are sweeping up a lot of other people along with this. So the question then becomes, well, these are people that they came here because of really dire, in most cases, dire economic and in some cases political conditions in their home countries, Mexico, Central America, Venezuela. And they are in this country, in cities like Chicago and Springfield, they are cooking our meals. They are staffing restaurants. They are the landscapers that many people are hiring and that get hired. They're day laborers that are performing a lot of the grunt work on construction sites. They're performing all these tasks, and our economy relies on them. And yet, the Trump administration has a goal of removing a million undocumented immigrants this year. So there's a contradiction there. And so there's not an active discussion of, well, how can we reform some of these immigration laws so that this to make this whole system more rational, right? You know, Trump himself, his company's employed all sorts of undocumented immigrants over the years. But here they are, they're going after them hard.
The thing that gets me is that some of the people who are picked up aren't folks who got here the last year or so. Some of them are people who've been here a very long time, some for decades, who have families, have businesses, and they're getting snatched by the ICE folks. And the administration's excuse is, well, you're a criminal because you're undocumented, even though you were allowed to come here under protections that Biden may have put in place. Well, those don't count anymore. And so the distinction, the administration talks about, we're getting the worst of the worst, the murderers, the rapists, the pedophiles. And in reality, that's not who they're getting. But their definition of criminal is anybody who's undocumented. And that is not a criminal offense. That is a civil offense. But they're arguing that they can come after you as though you're a convicted criminal. And that's a distinction I think needs to be made. I mean, a civil offense, that's like you get a parking ticket. And you don't go to jail for that. But in the minds of the immigration folks, if you can't show your ID, if you can't show the passport showing you're an American citizen, we're going to throw you in jail. And I think that is morally wrong, but also as a practical matter, as Chip was saying, a lot of these folks come here and they do the kind of jobs that Americans don't want to do. Working out in the fields, harvesting, for example, or doing roofing work, or landscaping, or working long hours for minimum wage in restaurants, the kind of things that Americans just don't do to the same extent. And there's going to be really an economic price to pay when we lose, if in fact we do, lose this large segment of our workforce.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and WBEZ's Chip Mitchell. And Chip, what are things like right now in some of these immigrant communities?
Well, there's a lot of fear, and the most densely immigrant neighborhoods, there's a lot less activity on the streets. You know, when you have agents that are grabbing street vendors that are selling, you know, tamales on a street corner, old ladies that are there, people are not, they're going to stay indoors, and people are afraid to get their kids to school. People have been detained after dropping their kids off at school. The Trump administration, of course, they've gotten rid of a policy of not undertaking immigration arrests in what were known as sort of sensitive areas, hospitals, schools, and churches. And that policy is gone. And so there's a feeling that there's nowhere safe unless you lock yourself in your house. And even then, you know, that there's no guarantee. There's a lot less street activity. You know, I got to say also, though, and there's been a strong response also from the community. And I don't just mean, you know, street protests at the detention facility in West Suburban Broadview or downtown. There have been plenty of those, but there's a lot of grassroots activity to stand up to ICE. And it's in the form of rapid response networks that, and some of them are very organized and some are kind of loosely organized, but these are usually it's a network of volunteers, community members, neighbors. It could be something highly organized, like, you know, the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights has a 24/7 hotline. People call in and report sightings of immigration agents. And then that goes out in a text alert, or in a couple of other cases, it's very active Facebook pages, and then people show up where that activity is going on, and they film the ICE agents, they protest loudly, beat drums, and they try to record any abusive activity. So that's going on in a number of, some of them that are sort of like Chicago area wide networks. Others are specific to neighborhoods like Pilsen, Albany Park, that have a lot of immigrants. Others are taking place in the suburbs. Some of them are just neighborhood specific, where it's a group of neighbors that are doing it, watching out for each other. And that has been really something that's been interesting to see. And I spent a couple of days actually with a guy named Cristobal Cavazos. He heads a rapid response network. They call it the People's Patrol. And it's headquartered in, of all places, Wheaton, West Suburban Wheaton. Not the place I would have been thinking of is where this sort of activity would be headquartered. And he and others are spending large parts of their day driving around, responding to these alerts of sightings of ICE agents, anywhere from, you know, the day I spent a day and a half with him, he was everywhere from Bensonville near O'Hare International Airport all the way out to Elgin and back into Bloomingdale. What they want to be in the face of these agents and sending a message to the community is to not cower and to stand up. And it's like it's a message of having courage, you know, and having self-value, not to internalize these messages that are coming from the federal government. You know, these are people that are doing valuable work. They may be working in a food processing factory where they're providing us food. They're providing all of us our food that we eat every day. And they may be taking care of young kids and working, doing domestic work. And the message is that they want to get out is you are a valuable person. You don't deserve to be treated this way. And we're here to voice support for you. And then another thing that happens is they try to, you know, find out the names of these arrestees and connect them to legal resources.
Charlie, also this week, Donald Trump spoke to a group of military leaders that took place in Washington. He mentioned Chicago during that as well, talking about using the military, using the Democratic-led cities like Chicago as military training for ground troops, and said that could be coming very soon. I wanted to get your take on what you heard there.
I think it's just a horrible idea. Using troops, and the defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, said that basically troops' job is to kill and break things, and to say you're going to train them in cities. The role of military forces and the role of law enforcement are two very different in my mind. And people who are trained to be battlefield combatants, and you send them into a neighborhood where they have to try and resolve disputes peacefully, it just doesn't make any sense in my mind. And this notion that Chicago is some kind of a hellhole that Trump keeps promoting. Interestingly enough, there was a report earlier this week that the city's visitors during the summer set records for hotel occupancy. From June through August, hotel in the city's central business district booked nearly 3.6 million room nights, which is about 4% over 2024, and that topped the pre-COVID record in 2019. So the notion that somehow or other Chicago is such a dangerous place is really misleading. Yeah. And I think, Chip, you had a story, it was about a month ago, showing actually you guys at BEZ analyzed the city's crime data going back decades, that Chicago, I think, wasn't it that the murder rate was down, the summer murder rate was down the lowest since 1965?
Yeah, we're down, exactly, Charlie. Murders this year to date are down almost 50% from this date in 2021. 50%. This year alone, compared to last year, down almost 30%. Similar trends down in violent crime overall. And yeah, the top finding that we had is that the months of June, July, and August had fewer murders than any year for those months since 1965. So this is as Trump, you know, we you know, we noticed Trump is promoting, you know, and warning, we're going to send the National Guard into Chicago. It's a hellhole and so on. And it's all about fighting crime, all the dangerous crime and everything. It's all out of control. So, you know, we knew that that was false. And so we just look, you know, we used FOIA and we got a bunch, you know, we got a bunch of data and we looked at it. So, you know, yeah, a hellhole, this gorgeous city, its amazing diversity, all the incredible architecture, the skyline along an ocean of fresh water. And we have the president of the United States repeatedly over and over incessantly talking about Chicago as a hellhole. It's really something.
Well, we'll continue to follow what's going on up there, but I did want to leave a couple of minutes here to talk about another issue, somebody that's maybe leaving the city, it appears, and that's the Chicago Bears. They came out this week with their plan to move to Arlington Heights, and it sounds like they want some state assistance for that and maybe some other government assistance. Charlie, what did you make of what the Bears had to say?
Well, I think it's pretty much the same story that it's been for quite some time. Basically, the Bears want to get a special deal that would allow them to negotiate with local taxing authorities over the amount of property taxes that they would have to pay for up to 40 years. Now, this is so that they can build this a stadium that they'll pay for in Arlington Heights, but it's going to require a ton of additional money for infrastructure and to fully develop their plans. But the situation in my mind remains the same as it has been for the last year or so. And House Speaker Chris Welch emphasized this in a meeting that he had a few days ago in Arlington Heights. And he basically said, I'm quoting here now, he said, "What I have to do is talk to the members about it, this property tax break that the Bears want, and see where they are. If there's support for it, it goes forward. If there's no support, it doesn't." And Welch's position is that he won't call a bill to the floor for a vote unless it has a chance of passing the 118-member chamber. Democrats have a 78-vote supermajority, and they have to get, for this legislation, they would have to get some support from at least a few of the 27 lawmakers who are from the city. And Pritzker has expressed support for the general concept, but he has also said that one prerequisite for the Bears would be for the Bears to first pay off the $534 million owed for the 2003 Soldier Field renovation. And there was a story, I think it was in the Tribune, that kind of scoffed at the Bears' projections, and they quoted a Kennesaw State University professor of economics who said that studies have shown spending on sports typically replaces money that people would otherwise spend on other entertainment. And the quote is, "This isn't a study, it's purchase propaganda. It does not use established economic methods or analyzing economic outcomes. Its conclusions are not credible. This is a fantasy document." And this was referring to the plans that the Bears announced when they had their stadium renderings and the economic impact that they predicted that would bring in something like $1 billion a year in economic development.
And Chip, I'm sure, just about a minute here to go, but I'm sure that people are in Chicago are a little skeptical of this idea.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And we're in the third biggest media market in the country. And so it raises, you know, where are the Bears? Are the Bears going to leave town? I kind of doubt it. And if they did leave town, there would be somebody else here to take their place very fast. I sort of doubt that the Bears are going to leave us for, say, Austin, Texas, or even San Diego, where there are two other NFL teams within spitting distance. Now, I got to say, you mentioned the renderings, too. To me, the architectural renderings of this stadium and the development, it seemed, it was a domed stadium, circular shape like an ashtray. There was kind of a brutalist aesthetic, a fixed roof, and of course, artificial turf. it to me, it seemed like a very unpleasant throwback to a wave of stadiums built in the 60s and 70s, you know, the Astrodome, the New Orleans Superdome, Seattle Kingdome, and so on. And so I was a little bit shocked that for that, the Bears are asking for all of this help from taxpayers to for infrastructure and property tax breaks. I'd say, you know, send the architect back and do a lot better at a minimum.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field, and Chip will stay with you first.
Well, we were talking about all of this ice activity, and one thing I've noticed, I was out on at this West Suburban Processing Center Immigration Processing Center in Broadview, and it seemed to me, you know, there tear gas being used and baton rounds, pepper balls, and so on. But one thing I couldn't help but notice too is that some of the protesters are they seem to be really getting getting off on provoking the agents as best as they can. So I'm just kind of interested in and I'll be looking for next time I'm out for any provocateurs. This is something that governments do when in these sorts of situations and I'm kind of very interested in learning more about the people that are the most militant actors on the side of protesters out there.
All right. And Charlie.
The Illinois Flash Index ticked slightly upward in September to 101.8, virtually unchanged from the 101.7 level in August. That was reported this week by U of I Professor Emeritus Fred Geertz. And of course, any reading above 100 indicates growth. And Geertz noted the continuing surprising stability of the index over the last 12 months amid major economic and political turbulence. On the positive side, Professor said, the national GDP growth for the second quarter was revised upward to a strong 3.8%, with equity markets near their all-time highs. So that is good news. And of course, Geertz compiles the Flash Index for the U of I's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And then the legislature's fiscal gurus, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, reported that through the first quarter of FY 2026, revenues into the state's general funds were up $450 million, or 3.7%, which is good. And the breakdown had the net personal income taxes were up 219, sales tax up 84, net corporate income taxes were down 215, but overall it added up to $450 million more in the first quarter of 2026 than in the first quarter of 2025. But they also caution that there's a lot of uncertainty out there, as we've mentioned before, in terms of the governor asking his agencies to identify roughly 4% of money that can be kind of held back because of the uncertainty with what kind of retribution Trump is going to use against blue states with this budget shutdown in Washington.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Chip Mitchell with WBEC. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.